Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Palm smells best in the evening. It's not worth believing what you heard. Soylent Green, really just a Triscuit, not a people biscuit. Take my word. It's been said you can't handle the truth, but that ain't so. How do I know?
Some have called it the most expensive film ever made on a cost-per-minute basis. And it was one of the earliest four-dimensional films that utilized in-theater butt pinches and sprays and stuff like that. Ah, well, there goes my dramatic intro. It has interactive theater elements, is what I meant to say, like little air sprays and mists and little trembles in the seats, and it's all very gropey. Anyway, my name's Matt Gourley. This is I Was There Too, the show where I talk to people who are present in the great scenes of cinema history. And today's film is Captain EO, the Disney multi-dimensional interactive attraction that stars Michael Jackson. Originally released in 1986, it was then re-released in 2010 after Jackson's death. It's a strange mishmash of the best of 80s science fiction. It's got tons of H.R. Giger influences in there. Henson puppets. It kind of looks like it could be from a Dune novel, or if you know the comic book artist Mobius. The enemy ship looks like it's from Star Trek. The robots look like they're from the movie The Black Hole. There's something very similar to the Star Wars trench run in the Battle of the Death Star. It's got little resemblances to Max Headroom and Time Bandits throughout. It's kind of doing what the 80s did best, and that was take from other sources and make it something new, even if it isn't new. Well, now I've gotten deep. Happy 2015, everyone. I hope your new year is going well. It's time to connect today's guest to last episode's guest. This one's easy. Peter Burkrot to Bill Murray in Caddyshack, Bill Murray to Angelica Houston in The Royal Tenenbaums, Angelica Houston to Doug Benson in Captain EO. It was my personal pleasure to have Doug Benson as a guest on this show. He's a great interview, as you're going to hear, and it's my hope that he'll be a sort of regular guest on this program because, A, the stories he has to tell are fantastic, but B, as you'll hear in the discussion, he's been in a bunch of iconic movies in some capacity, so I hope he will join us on a regular basis until we use all of those up and then maybe beyond. Also, a couple episodes ago, I mentioned how it's my personal quest to find somebody that's been squibbed. Well, my search is over. Doug is a great comedian and actor, and no small master of podcasts himself. Doug Loves Movies is a favorite of mine. He also does Getting Doug with High, and his new Netflix special, Doug Dynasty, is streaming right now. Check it out. It's really funny. I've seen it, and it's just fantastic. Okay. Let's get into this thing. Let's dive into it hard and fast, and at the other side of the musical transition, we'll hit the ground running. But also stick around for a new segment at the end of the interview where I talk to someone who is incredibly special to me. And I think you're going to love her. Here we go.
The film, Captain EO. The year, 1986. The role, Orange Dancer. The actor, Doug Benson.
Hey.
You're bringing a guest into it fast.
I'm dying to hear about your
experience with Captain EO. First of all, how did this even happen? You grew up in Southern California, right?
Mm-hmm.
You must just have been a youngster.
Yeah, I was very young. I was in L.A. for, I don't know, maybe a couple of months or something. I grew up in San Diego, and I drove back and forth to L.A. quite a bit.
Day by day, or would you stay up
No,
there?
Just, you know, I had a friend whose dad would let us crash at his place, and you know, and eventually, you know, built up some other friends. But basically, all of my drama nerd friends in San Diego were all just, you know, starry-eyed about Los Angeles. So we came up here as frequently as possible. And so my first two forays into being an extra in movies were – it's kind of crazy that the first two movies I ever – appeared in, however briefly, are also just huge classic movies, Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Blade Runner.
That's incredible.
And those, I did both of those not living in L.A. yet, just coming up from San Diego and staying somewhere. And my friend was also an extra in both those things, and so he kind of got me, you know, got me involved on board.
So he brought you into the whatever the casting process was for extras?
Yeah, well, at that time, I'm not sure how it's changed, and don't anybody ask me to help them figure it out. It's kind of like open mics and comedy. They sort of shift over time and
you
change.
You got to make your own way.
And, yeah. And you also, you know, it's not something, especially with the internet now. There was no internet when I was doing this, so it was just you just through word of mouth found out through the other extras the names of all the various people that cast stuff. And they needed a lot of extras for Blade Runner because they were going to be shooting the whole sequence outside on the Warner Brothers lot where Deckard is chasing the lady stripper replicant.
Oh, yeah.
The snake lady when he's chasing her down the street.
And she's wearing that like see-through raincoat.
Yeah, she had a fun outfit on it. And then a really bad stunt double when she goes through a plate glass window. But in slow motions, like the weirdest, like Ridley Scott of all people has a shot that's clearly a stunt double.
Yeah.
He wouldn't do that sort of thing these days.
I feel like you're meant to be the patron saint of this podcast because the movies that you've been extra on were tailor-made for this. So I hope we can talk about some of these other films.
I've got, you know, plenty to say about my brief time on each of these films. And in the case of Blade Runner, they needed a lot of extras and they needed us to just all be outside all night under fake rain. So it was extremely uncomfortable. I was very sick during part of it, but, you know, I was so excited to be like at that time, it was like me and my friend could not believe we were, you know, on a set that looked like an amusement park. Like it was a really cool looking set. Like
right.
It was really tricked out. But then also, you know, Harrison Ford, like Star Wars and Alien were our favorite movies.
That's
and so we were on a Ridley Scott, Harrison Ford set. And then, you know, the rest of that, of course, is history that the movie came out was – it was very – people weren't that impressed that I was – people weren't that impressed that I was in it. You know, it wasn't really the greatest thing to brag about because it was such a failure when it came out.
But over time,
but
you get
so,
some extra cred.
But so that's what happened is I was the reason I told the Blade Runner thing is just to say that, like, you know, I was very into doing this sort of stuff before I even moved up here. And then shortly after that, I moved to L.A. And one of my friends from San Diego who had also moved to L.A., I mean, there was like four or five of us of 2 or 3 years of school. You know, like when I was a sophomore, I was friends with a guy who was a junior and
you're
another
talking
guy
high
who was
school.
A senior. Yeah.
Okay.
college is like I messed around with community college for a while and gave up on it and followed these other guys up to L.A. because I knew people that made the move. They were making it work. And so this one guy is a one-legged he's an amputee from like the knee down on one leg and he worked as a kind of one of the people sort of in charge of Michael Jackson's production company.
Oh, wow.
So he hired me
Wait, to is be, he the guy that plays Major
Yeah,
Domo?
Yeah, you're getting ahead of me here.
I'm sorry.
He hired me to help out as a PA on Michael Jackson's stuff. So for several weeks, my job was basically just driving out to the back and forth between Hollywood and the Valley, just delivering, again, pre-internet. So yeah. I was just delivering random things for Michael Jackson, like random legal papers and stuff.
Nothing
weird. I didn't get to see him much, but I got to go out to his house a lot and you know, in his lawyer's office and things like that.
Was this pre-Neverland, right? Because that was more north.
Well, Neverland may have existed at the time. I'm not sure of the timeline on that, but if it didn't, it was about to. It was close.
Okay.
But yeah, it might not have existed yet, but he probably opened it shortly thereafter, and opened it to the public, the children that are boys.
He opened it to the public perception of what it was.
So I did that for a while, and that was I didn't really like that kind of work, and I'm glad that I eventually got out of it. But it was still kind of neat to have. At that time, he was it was called Smooth Criminal Productions, is what it said on my checks, and I got like $75 a day or something like that in gas money. So
that's not bad '80s money.
No, not bad at all. You know, it really got me by that between that and doing extra work. So, but I also wanted to keep doing, extra work and stuff. So I kind of, tapered off on the production assistant thing. This guy that I know at, Michael Jackson Production Company, he, since he only had one leg, was the perfect choice to be inside the Major Domo costume for the Captain EO attraction. Uh-huh. And so I was hearing all about that from him, that he was playing the robot and it sounded amazing. And then it sounded like it was going way over budget and that things were kind of crazy. And then one day I got the call from my friend, the robot, and he said, do you want to be a dancer in Captain EO on Saturday for $50?
$50?
Yeah.
You're losing money to do this.
Yeah. It didn't pay well. I mean, there might have been overtime, but I forget. It was a long ass day. I remember that. But I was like, a dancer? What are you kidding me? And he said that basically Francis Coppola had gone so over budget on this short film for Disneyland that they just said, F it, let's just not pay professional dancers for the last day of the shoot. Let's just bring in people and put them in the same costumes that the real dancers have been wearing. The svelte, you know, comely dancers have been wearing, and let's just put a bunch of random slobs in these outfits. And then, so it's the point where, spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen it, that Angelica Houston plays an ugly witch and she gets turned into a less ugly princess. And
wait, I have to tell you
in that moment.
So my only knowledge going into this was Doug Benson was a dancer in Captain EO. So in my mind, it could have gone anywhere from what you're saying to, no, he was a legit dancer.
I was a legit dancer back in the day. Yeah. No, I was terrible at it, and they so it's the scene where we all are just celebrating that she's a nice princess and Captain EO saved the day.
Oh, okay.
Through music,
like the whole set turns into that Greek looking kind of amphitheater.
Yeah. So that's what I was. That's basically what I was on. Was like the scene at the beginning of the day. We're all kneeling around Princess Angelica, and then and the idea was. I think they may have even brought us in a day before or it's just a really long day, but they had the choreographer of the thing of Captain EO try to teach us all a dance, and it was so terrible. They gave up on it. They're like, scrap that. Let's just do whatever, just freestyle it. So the idea was we were just told to all jump up and dance around happily because of what has happened. And so since I'm not good at dancing and yet I was still there, I took advantage of it and just behaved like a complete idiot.
What
like
do you
just
mean?
You know, just like approximating what a dancer might, you know, jumping around like, you know, kind of ballet style jumps and and a little, you know, a little just kind of freestyle rocking out. At one point, when I'm watching the movie in the theater at Disneyland, I can spot myself very briefly. But as you can imagine, the cuts are pretty fast and the shots are pretty wide because it's a bunch of non-professional dancers
right.
at the end of this thing, and they just want to get it over with. Yeah. And in fact, in the scene, they cut to Michael Jackson and his little furry friends a lot, uh-huh. you know, and there's yeah. nothing going on their side of the shot. None of us are in their side of the
I
shot.
I love that they're the B-roll that they need to cut away to.
Yeah,
to
we really need to cut to Michael Jackson here. So like it's a crappy shot. Like it's Michael Jackson. There's nothing in the background because it's pointing in the wrong direction. It's almost like they did it on a green screen, and then in the movie it's just white behind them.
Oh my God.
So they cut around me. So it makes it even on YouTube or wherever you're looking at it. It's very difficult to pick me out. And here's the thing that I regret and will regret for the rest of my life. I was on that set all day long, and again, we didn't have cameras in our pockets, so I never got a picture of me
with Michael Jackson.
In the outfit.
Oh,
yeah, I don't care about with Michael Jackson because that would have been unprofessional to try to get a picture with him.
Yeah, and he doesn't photograph anyway. Let's be honest.
Yeah, but yeah, so I don't have a picture of me in the outfit, so I can't even use it as a source of reference. Like sometimes I go, was I yellow or orange? Like sometimes I get confused about it because there was like three colors of outfits, and we sat around together all day looking at each other.
The internet says you're the orange dancer, and is
yeah. You know where so that's why from. I kind of think that's true, but I kind of also picture myself in a yellow outfit for some reason because yellow is even more embarrassing because it was like. You know, there's like a little tie at the ankle, and then it's completely slit all the way up the leg.
Oh, I didn't
and you
catch
can even
that.
You can even see a little bit of a matching tight underwear underneath.
Really?
Yeah, they gave us matching underwear.
Well, this begs a second viewing.
And yeah, I decided to sit in a chair and get orange and white lines painted on my face and my hair all made up in that terrible sort of punk hairsprayed and painted kind of look. And it wasn't a terribly uncomfortable day, as I recall, but it was just a super long ass day. And the whole time it's just kind of like a lot of eye rolling. Like, you know, I've walked into a, you know, like Titanic or Heaven's Gate or something where it's like, it's a story that this thing is out of control.
Right. I read quite a bit about it.
Yeah. And so then I got to be there and see that it was just no one seemed to know what they were doing. And they had gigantic cameras for the 3D effects, you know, like almost like probably what has turned into these days the IMAX camera that's so huge and expensive. And that's part of why the movie, as I recall, why it went so over budget is they had so many problems with the camera.
Right. And in fact, I hear even if you watch the finished version, there are some shots that are out of sync that they never quite got right.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that there's technical things throughout that are funky. And and you can definitely see, you know, for the scenes where the little butterfly cat or whatever the thing's supposed to be.
Fuzzball.
Which, like, the way Michael Jackson says it in the movie just sounds like an insult.
Yeah.
You know, it just sounds like, you stupid Fuzzball. But I guess that's really his name. But Fuzzball was operated by a guy when he was on Michael's shoulder. And there's a couple shots in the movie where you could see the guy's head or arm.
Oh,
you could
God.
See that there's somebody behind Michael Jackson operating the puppet.
How does this happen?
And strangely, coincidentally, in Blade Runner, you could see the strings on one of the flying cars.
Really?
Yeah. It's just like, come on.
Yeah.
Coppola and Ridley Scott are letting that stuff fly, get through.
How was Coppola? You're working
he was
with
just,
one of the greatest
seemed,
directors of all time.
He just seemed kind of, somewhat manic and unhappy, you know, and sort of – I strangely didn't focus on him very much because it was the most distracting thing about the experience was that every time Michael Jackson was doing his thing, because we got to be there while he like danced around a lot.
Yeah.
So it was always fun for them to hit the playback really loud and you're just there watching Michael Jackson dance around up close and nobody seems to be worried security wise that somebody might, one of these extras might be a nut bar. But every time they said cut, he would go and sit on a chair in the corner with his young friend. I think the kid's name was Jonathan, maybe.
And Michael Jackson would, or Francis?
Michael Jackson, uh-huh, with his kid in his lap, and they would like whisper in each other's ear and giggle and just seem to be having the time of their life just hanging out together in a chair.
And this guy wasn't involved with the production. He was just his pal.
He was just like a, you know, like a Macaulay Culkin looking sort of kid.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And that, you know, who knows? Sure. Like, I don't know if that kid, if anything happened to him, or if he ever tried to, if he was one of those ones that ever tried to press charges. I don't,
even
I don't
if you take that stuff out of the equation, it's still, it's
creepy as hell. Like, when people would, you know, from that day forward, when the subject of Michael Jackson and children would come up, I'd go, well, he's a creep. Like, yeah, he's doing inappropriate things with other people's children. You know, whether or not he's, it ever gets sexual is you know, that's, we may never know, but I bet it did, because he just that he is on record as telling children that wine is Jesus juice.
Yeah, that's enough.
Like, that's enough. That's it. But people, he's exonerated. The high school in Hollywood that had the Michael Jackson auditorium, uh-huh, they covered it up when he got all those charges. And then a few years after his, a while after his death, they uncovered it again.
Same
it's
with
back
this,
to the Michael Jackson auditorium.
They brought this back and in Captain 2010 EO, after, yeah,
and
he now died.
And all they did was add to the sign the word tribute, which, yeah, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's,
yeah,
like they're trying to distance themselves a little bit. Like, well, Disneyland doesn't condone what we've learned, but we also, you know, we have this theater and this movie, and, you know, how long are we going to show Honey, I Shrunk the Audience?
Yeah. Enough time has passed where we can appreciate the work and not necessarily the man and his legend. All right, we have to take a little break, and then we'll come back and, okay, talk more about this. Thank you, Ben. Back, I'm just taking deep breath after deep breath hearing these things.
Can I jump forward a little bit for an interesting aspect of the story?
Wherever you want to take us.
So then, years later, as I, you know, when the subject comes up, sometimes I won't mention it, but most of the time, if the subject of Captain EO comes up, it's pretty
you
awesome
got that
to be able
pocket.
To say I was in that.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, it was an episode of Doug Loves Movies. And the subject of whether or not Michael Jackson was a child molester came up somehow. And I went off, just went off about how I'm pretty convinced that he was. And then that's the week he died. He died like – so this very fresh episode of the podcast, I'm going off about this guy that his death definitely made a lot of people get, you know, cut him some slack. In terms, yeah, of what they feel about him, because now he's dead, you know?
So not just the recording, but the episode came out before, right before
it
the
came
death.
Out like day of, you oh, know, it was like, it was, God. The timing was awful. It was really bad. So I got a lot of angry reaction from that. But still, listen to what I say. Listen to what I was saying. I stand behind everything I said, yeah, there, that he's a creepy dude.
The coincidence doesn't change anything.
Yeah, it doesn't, yeah, change that he was a creep, and it's sad that he also was, you know, so addicted to painkillers and stuff that he let that doctor, you know, basically kill him.
Yeah. Did you have any interaction with him on the set? Any?
No. Other than just being, you know, just being in a close enough proximity the whole time to just be sort of, you know, kind of blown away by it. But also a set, like the same thing happened with Harrison Ford. Like, you know, as much as I admired him, yeah, I got tired of, you know, I got less interested in being him standing nearby.
Right.
You know, I wasn't like – but that was 5 nights. You know, that was like a whole week. But the one day of – like the one 18-hour day I spent with Michael Jackson, I didn't ever speak to him. Nobody else ever did. Like, it was just very – like, he was already a kind of a figure that everyone just assumed should be left alone.
With his little friend.
They might have even – I don't even remember them saying anything, but they might have even instructed us to not speak to him or anything. One time I was in his office when they were having a meeting. They were showing him some drawings for like this Smooth Criminal video or something. And so I got to – again, I got to sort of be in a room with him with only like 4 or 5 other people. But, you know, no words exchanged to each other, you know, a mask on his face, you know.
At his home?
No, at the office.
Oh, at the really?
Yeah,
even
the
then.
Studios over in – it's funny. Culver City Studios is where they did Captain EO in one of the stages there. And at least for the first several months of my podcast, Getting Dug with High, we did it in an office right across from where that soundstage is. So it's a nice homecoming.
And full circle.
And that was another kind of cool thing that happened during Captain EO is during lunch at the commissary, Francis Ford Coppola had a meeting with like Jim Carrey and Nicolas Cage and two or three other people who I was familiar with because I was a big movie fan and comedy fan. Harry Basil, I think, was one of them. He's a stand-up. They were all just meeting with Francis at the commissary.
Oh, wow.
About Peggy Sue Got Married.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And so that was at the time I thought that was neat. I was excited to see them all together.
Right?
Kathleen Turner. And, yeah.
And he had just come off the Cotton Club, and I read somewhere that –
That was a big over-the-top disaster money-wise and stuff. I think it's a great film. I really like watching it.
I do too. And I read that he kind of took Captain EO to repair his reputation and for the Cotton Club, and I love that that's the way he went with
it. I give Captain EO credit for one thing, and that's to this day it's still the best 3D I've ever seen in a motion picture theater.
Really?
Because something comes out and floats right in front of your face. It does not happen in any 3D movies. Even Avatar, there isn't an object coming out and just sitting there like when you're watching Captain EO at Disneyland, children are swatting at it.
I remember that. That's
you know what I mean?
And
3D movies today, you're not watching Guardians of the Galaxy and swatting at anything or going, wow, that's really close to my face.
Yeah. The things I remember distinctly from my childhood and seeing it was the asteroid at the beginning, the little fuzzball, but those soldiers pointing their spears at you, like old 50s, 3D
stuff. Spears, that was old school, but it was still pretty good. Like they came out pretty far. But like when that fuzzball, when he flies out over the audience and when the asteroid explodes at the beginning, both of those things, like it really looks like it's right there.
It
in front
almost
of
feels
you.
Like it's behind you in some way. Like you can get between it.
I think they called that place the Magic Eye Theater.
Yeah.
And that's I don't know why 3D movies aren't more like that, but that might be why they had those big expensive cameras and why Captain EO probably can't be shown anywhere but that theater there and the one at Epcot and I can imagine that the Disneylands that are in other countries will never stop showing it.
Because
you don't need to speak English to understand how stupid it is.
How is Angelica Houston? You weren't there when she was in makeup.
She was just in the pretty makeup. I mean, they may have shown us a picture or something of the uglier version. We didn't – we just saw her, and she just stood around. And at the time, I was a little negligent on understanding what a legendary figure she was.
I would have been too.
She wasn't she hadn't done a lot of on-camera acting at that – like she was in this, I think, because she sort of popped with Preetzi's Honor.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so prior to that, it's just like, oh, John Huston's daughter or whatever she was. But now since then, she's done a lot of amazing things.
Yeah. There's a question that I don't even know if anybody can answer, but Jackson moonwalks in this, and I was wondering like – was that his idea of like, I'm going to do my trademark thing, or were the Disney suits going, we have to get your moonwalk in here that,
I think, that he called one of his things that he did Moonwalker. And I think he's pretty proud of having come up with that. And you can't really do a Michael Jackson outer space thing and not have him moonwalk.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
It's kind of, so I don't think anybody had to discuss that. I think that was just like, and of course he's going to moonwalk. But man, seeing him do it in person is really, it's impressive. Like a lot of people are good at it, but there's something about, him sort of coming up with it and being that good at it. It's just like, he's just floating, it's pretty cool.
Do you remember his hyperbaric chamber incident? Apparently that's tied to this. Listen to this. The week of the grand opening, the National Enquirer printed an odd photo of Jackson lying inside a hyperbaric chamber. It was theorized that in order to live to be 150 years old, he slept in it each night to get that influx of oxygen. In reality, several biographies of Jackson pointed out that Jackson himself leaked the picture purposely at that time to draw attention to the premiere of Captain EO, especially with its sci-fi aspect.
Hmm.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It seems about right for him. You know, like, he just does the weirdest things. Like that thing when Thriller came out, that there was a disclaimer at the beginning that he doesn't believe in the occult. Yeah. And that this is just a movie. Right. It's just the weirdest. What are you talking about? What kind of odd disclaimer?
Did you get to go to the premiere at Disneyland for being a part of it? Or
I don't believe I was invited for being a part of it. I could be wrong, though. I might have been. Disneyland over that – during that period of time or several times over the years has had for different excuses where they just open up the park for the entire weekend. So if you get – you know, if you get inside, you don't have to leave for 3 days or whatever.
Star Tours premiere and all that.
Yeah. And so those – that stuff is just like I'm all over that stuff. So I did those things. And now that you mention it, I think I did get to go to like a premiere thing, but it was – you know, crazy crowded, and I was not treated special in any way.
Listen to the luminaries that were here, and I don't even want to call these 80s luminaries. These are like 70s. So Catherine Bach, Elizabeth Montgomery, Alan Thicke, Eric Estrada, John Ritter, Whoopi Goldberg, Charles Bronson, Sissy Spacek, Sarah Purcell. Do you remember Real People?
Mm-hmm.
God. Joyce Brothers, Dr. Joyce Brothers, Deborah Winger, Elliot Gould, Dolph Lundgren, Apollonia, and even Jack Nicholson, who was the boyfriend of Angelica Houston.
Yeah.
Wow. You were really rubbing.
Right, but that's the thing is I don't think I got near any of that action. I think I was just part of the public.
That's amazing.
Because I think my friend was still associated with Michael Jackson at that time, so I think that's more why I got in than – it's not like they just invited all the extras to come to that thing. But I really don't remember seeing any of those people. So, and I did a lot of, especially in the first few years before I moved to LA. And once I lived in LA, I was super into going to things where celebrities were going to be there.
Sure.
In San Diego, the Old Globe Theater down there burned down. And I'd done a lot of volunteer work there to see free plays. And
wait, the Old Globe burned down? Like the original Old Globe burned down?
Yeah, in San Diego, they had an Old Globe Theater that burnt absolutely to the ground. It was like arson, and I don't think that's what happened to the original Globe. Yeah. And then they rebuilt it, and the one they rebuilt was really nice.
And they had a
telethon for it in San Diego, and so me and my friends just went down and stood outside. You know, it was several hours long. We just stood outside all night, just waiting for people to come and go and get their autograph. And it was like, you know, the most random selection of people. But thanks to making that effort, I have Christopher Reeve's autograph.
Oh, my God.
Just his name on a piece of paper signed by him.
I grew up in a suburb of L.A., so you would think I would run into – like I think the only celebrities I ever saw was Jeff Goldblum and Ben Vereen. They were shooting 10 Speed and Brown Shoe in downtown L.A., and I ran into them. But I used to go Rick D's TV talk show just to see – celebrities, just to go to a taping.
Yeah, well, that was sort of my mentality. And if you saw the certain Rick Dees shows, you saw me because I appeared on it a couple of times
on Into the
like
Night?
In sketches. Yeah,
what?
Yeah, I was in sketches. There's a sketch about there was some sort of newspaper article about a dog kidnapping a man or something like that.
Oh my God!
And so they reenacted it like they had a dog with they stuck a gun to its paw and then they put me like I was the man being held captive by the dog.
We have to do an Into the Night episode of I Was There Too.
But they barely remember that that's also a Jeff Goldblum movie.
That's right. Do you remember that show used to have this like Rube Goldberg trivia machine thing? I was the first person to ever win.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I hope you will come back and talk about every one of these movies along the line that you've been in. This is a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, well, and also the sooner I do it, the better, because I do sort of fuzz out on some of the details because it's been, so long and I've done so many, I logged so much time as an extra. I was like the first two or three years I lived in L.A., I started as an extra and then kind of moved into being a stand-in for various people. Like I was a stand-in for Patrick Dempsey for an entire feature film.
Can't Buy Me Love?
No, not as successful. It was called – when we were shooting, it was called The Woo Woo Kid. And when it came out, it was called In the Mood, which is just the most dumb, generic title that they stuck on there.
Oh, my God. Wait, so before we end, let's talk.
We got to stick to Captain EO.
I know, but I just want to talk because I'm excited about Blade Runner, but I'm actually really excited about Commando because I grew up on that movie. Who do you play in Commando?
Well, Commando has that great scene where Arnold Schwarzenegger's double, there's a ruckus in a mall and
he takes the balloon.
He grabs the decorative balloons and flies across and lands on the elevator.
Yeah.
Which is the exact same mall that I was in Fast Times in. And in both cases is the Sherman Oaks Galleria.
Yeah, that's right.
And in both cases, they closed it down to shoot those movies. So it was super surreal to be in a mall, all night long that wasn't really open. And especially a mall that was like so close to where I was living when we did Commando. Like it was like walking distance when I was in Commando. But the fun part about Commando and that I've experienced a few times in filmmaking is when – there's just a bunch of extras and you're in a real mall and David Patrick Kelly's like the bad guy running away from Schwarzenegger and he's got a gun and he's shooting it off, blanks or whatever.
Luther.
But it's just insanely exhilarating to just action, you're just in an action scene. You're just, you're just doing, just running around acting crazy and then also just getting to see them do that stunt, which, it looks like balloons, but there is just a massive wire in there, Like it's like when you're watching it in person, it's pretty stiff. It doesn't really look like he's flying across on the decorative balloons. But
have you ever been squibbed? I'm dying.
Yes.
You have? Well, okay.
Yeah, because I was in Return of the Living Dead Part 2.
Jesus.
That was my transition from being a stand-in to trying to be more of a full-fledged actor.
And you're squibbed on your first time out?
And I got I played about a dozen different zombies throughout the movie, and I got to be squibbed.
So for anyone that doesn't know what that is, it's having like an electronically ignited blood pack like you've been shot. They're called squibs.
Yeah, and with zombies, they just – and especially since we were shooting at night, they would blow up, but it would be more like that dust would come out. They didn't have actual blood coming out of them. And it was also a cheap, stupid movie. But I got to – over the course of a month, I got to really go through the rigors of having very complicated prosthetics put on every day.
Oh,
and it was a nightmare.
It sounds like it.
I was never comfortable. And it's also funny when you're really made up, like your face looks different, like a different person's face. Like every time you walk by a mirror, it's weird. Cause you just like, it's not your face, but you're walking into the mirror's line of vision and looking at it going, that's so creepy.
You know, you're looking at yourself, but yourself isn't looking back.
Yeah. But I got, not only did I get to do squibs in that movie, I also got, stuck to the wall with a fireplace poker, cut sliced in half. They hired a guy with no legs to play me after I get sliced in half. And
I love that your history involves a lot of people with missing appendages.
Oh, God. Yeah. You've
lived a life. You've lived my dream life.
But my favorite thing was I got to twice on Return of the Living Dead Part 2, I got to smash through a giant plate glass window with my hands.
All this on your first one out?
Yeah, and a lot of rain and a lot of very cold. We shot it across the freeway from Magic Mountain. And nothing makes me more upset than an amusement park within view day after day that you're not going to. You're not going to go on the rides. You're just going to look at it over there.
Well, thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you. This was super fun. And now I think I finally got it all out in one place
because
it comes up in a lot of interviews and I don't have time to get into it that deeply.
It's on record. Is there anything that you want to talk about that you're doing coming up or where they can find you?
DougLovesMovies.com is where all my tour dates are, and I travel around doing stand-up and Doug Loves Movies and movie interruptions and all sorts of stuff, and my first 1-hour special, Doug Dynasty, is on Netflix streaming nowish.
All right,
should be now.
I hope we'll have you back soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right.
What did I say in that interview? You know you're looking at yourself, but yourself isn't looking back. If you haven't listened to the first episode of this podcast, when Paul F. Tompkins tells the story behind his line in the movie There Will Be Blood, "Gentlemen, we gain nothing by losing our heads," he doesn't think it's a remarkable line. I happen to think it's a remarkable line. But what I just said is really the case of saying something stupid, but under the guise of a wise musing. You know you're looking at yourself, but yourself isn't looking back.
That's good.
Speaking of old episodes of I Was There Too, there's been a slight development in the story with Melody Ray from The Untouchables, who played the woman with the baby carriage in the famous shootout scene. In that interview, she was talking about the baby and how his father was one of the stunt choreographers. And I joked that, you know, he probably grew up to be a stuntman. That's because he loved hearing the guns go off, and he would probably be in his 30s now. Well, a couple of listeners sent me links. Colin Himes is his name, and he is indeed a stuntman. I even contacted him to try to do a reunion through the podcast, but I didn't hear much back from him. He's a stuntman. Stuntmen don't talk. There's another old adage. I'd like t-shirts made of, you know you're looking at yourself, but yourself isn't looking back, and stuntmen don't talk. Okay, on to this new segment where I am going to talk to the loveliest woman in the world, my grandmother, Eleanor Gourley, because she used to live at the corner of Sunset and Crescent Heights in the 30s and 40s in Hollywood, where the infamous locations of the Garden of Allah apartment villas and the Schwab's drugstore used to be. If you don't know anything about these two places, they are sort of infamous because of their Hollywood history. A little bit about Schwab's. It was sort of a Hollywood hangout drugstore pharmacy with a soda fountain, and you'll hear my grandmother talk about it. And this is just a reflection for her. She is too honorable a woman to tell any sordid stories. I think she just witnessed a lot of the comings and goings of various celebrities, and I wanted her to talk a little bit about what it was like to live there. Schwab's was where celebrities would go to hang out, to take meetings. In fact, William Holden's character Joe Gillis in Sunset Boulevard said, "After that, I drove down to headquarters. That's the way a lot of us think about Schwab's. Kind of a combination office, coffee klatch, and waiting room. Waiting. Waiting for the gravy train." And there my grandmother rubbed elbows with someone very special. It's also the place where Lana Turner was reportedly discovered, though I think she herself has said that that's not true. But apparently F. Scott Fitzgerald had his heart attack there, and it's said that composer Harold Arlen wrote Over the Rainbow after he had the tune pop into his head and he stopped in to write it down on a napkin or something. And right near there was the Garden of Allah apartments and hotel and Hollywood hangout complex, so named because it was basically built up by a silent screen actress named Alla Nazimova. And it's this Spanish villa that became this sort of decadent affair hunting grounds. Think San Diego Wild Animal Park, but with celebrity sex. I don't know. Some of the stories are pretty fun and sordid. Getting back to F. Scott Fitzgerald, he apparently was having an ongoing affair there while he kept his wife, Zelda, in a sanitarium. Humphrey Bogart stayed there with his second wife, Mary Phillips, then with his third wife before he married her. But then when he was trying to get rid of her to make way for Lauren Bacall, whom he reportedly met at the Garden of Allah, there were all of these fights, and that's why he gave his third wife the nickname Sluggy.
True story.
John Barrymore was said to keep a bicycle there so as not to waste any time going from villa to villa so he could fill his liver full of all sorts of alcohol. And it's even the place that supposedly Joni Mitchell wrote Big Yellow Taxi about. They paved paradise and put up a parking lot, because that's what it is today, a parking lot. And Schwab's itself closed in 1983 and became a Virgin megastore, but that is now gone, along with a lot of Hollywood history. But thinking about the affairs that went on at that place and how they were probably fueled by a lot of the prescription medication the celebrities got at Schwab's drugstore, it was a intersection of Hollywood history, and I'm thrilled to have my grandma in to talk to her a little bit about that. She's very dear to me. My grandfather passed away last year, and both he and she have been incredible inspirations in my life, so I'm very happy to talk to her about her experiences and remember him a little bit. I think you're going to love him as much as I do. I will post some pictures of both Schwab's and the Garden of Allah on the episode webpage. And now let's find out why Eleanor Gourley doesn't go by the name Eleanor. In a segment I'm calling
I Was There, circa 1942.
So I'm here with my wonderful grandmother, Eleanor Gourley, but you go by Eddie, right?
That's right.
And what's the quick story on that? You just...
Oh, okay. That happened. I was living with my grandparents when I was born. My dad was at war, And so my grandfather named me Eddie May. But as I got older then, I dropped the May, and it was just Eddie. When I got in school, they called me Eleanor. But then when I met Jim and we married, he picked up the Eddie from my family. And so I've been Eddie.
So when you say your father was at war, that was World War I. And I don't want to reveal your age because a gentleman never asks and a lady never tells. But it's up to you. It's pretty impressive.
Well, for you, Matt, my wonderful grandson, I'll tell you. 96. Going on 97.
And you would never know it. I have to tell you a little bit about my grandma because she's an amazing inspiration to our entire family. It wasn't long ago. You're active on Facebook. You taught a computer class not too long ago. Mm-hmm. You're incredible.
Thank you very much.
And every time we show up, you've got the most amazing batch of cookies ready to go. Your cookies are second to none.
Well, yes. Yes. I know that you expect them. Every one of the grandboys do. And also the sons, when they come, they expect them. So I got out of the shower just about an hour before you were supposed to arrive and realized I didn't have any chocolate chip cookies. So I quick.
This is where my love of cookies comes from.
Yeah.
I prefer to eat cookies for every meal if I can. And I think I have you to blame for that.
Probably. So I was able to greet you and Amanda at the door with a cookie in each hand for you.
So I'm very excited to talk about just a little bit about the history, because when you and Grandpa moved from Ohio to Los Angeles, you lived in many locations throughout Southern California, but for a while you lived very near the Garden of Allah Apartments, which has its own set of fascinating and sordid stories about old time Hollywood. But also you went to Schwab's drugstore, and am I wrong about this? You had a shake or a malt with Cesar Romero, who played the Joker on the Batman.
Crush. Oh, I Did had you? Such a crush on him. I went there every day. Your granddad went to work for Douglas, and he worked in the afternoon. And so he probably left for work around 2, I would say, for the third shift or second shift, maybe. I don't know what it was, but he worked about 3 to 12. And so as soon as he would leave, I would go up to Schwab's drugstore, and I was drinking Cokes. And I just drink one Coke right after another.
Really? Because this is where I get that from, too.
Yeah, and Cesar Romero came in there just, if I remember, just about every day.
Really?
And I would just sit there and drink the Cokes and just watch him. But I never was discovered. And I understand there were quite a few movie stars that were discovered there.
Was that kind of a hope of yours, or were you interested
in
that?
No, I wasn't. No, I didn't. I just fell in love with Cesar Romero.
Oh, that's adorable. Now, did you ever have any kind of discussion with him or anything?
Well, just nodding, just passing a few words. That's all. Yeah.
That's
nothing
sweet.
Real. Well, no, he was so handsome.
And it's all very innocent anyway, because my understanding is in the end, he didn't exactly go for the lady types. Did you know that?
That was a shock to me. Jimmy, our son, sat at a table with him up at the Gene Autry Museum, I think it was. They were at a big dinner there.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
My father?
Well, there was a big dinner there, and they were seated at this big round table, and there was a lady with him that always was by his side.
Uh-huh.
And so, but then he proceeded to tell me, when I got so excited, you know, about it, Jimmy proceeded to tell me that he was not interested in women.
Right. I think Marlene Dietrich has a famous quote about it. Have you ever heard this? Let me see if I can find it. She once said, Cesar Romero was the undisputed queen of homosexuals. I don't think there was a gay actor in Hollywood who hadn't been there.
But I was so naive. I don't think I really knew that there were people like that.
Right.
Because I was only 21.
And it wouldn't have been obvious at the time anyway.
No. I wouldn't have known what they were talking about.
And his roles were so dashing flamboyant in their own right, because he played the Joker, and you would expect him to be larger than life, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So you and Grandpa, you lived very close to the Garden of Allah apartment building, right?
when I came to California, Grandpa came out ahead of me and to get a job. And so he came in August, and I arrived in October. I rode the Greyhound bus out from Canton, Ohio.
How many days did that take?
Quite a few.
Jeez. Wow.
And I wasn't really dressed for it. I was going to California, so I didn't need heavy clothes. And so it happened that I sat beside a officer in the Navy, and he had a pea coat. So at night, he would loan me his pea coat. He would cover me with his pea coat. And he bought my meals, and I thought, boy, this is really neat. But he got a surprise when we got off of the bus, and Jim was there, grabbed me. So it was a kind of a disappointment, because I think he had something else in mind.
Well, it sounds like Grandma, and having seen pictures of you as a young woman, you were a foxy lady, and you were, I could see where you were charming the socks off these gentlemen, even now.
You mean after lunch?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, I was friendly.
Our waiter really took a fancy to you, right? And
yeah, he did, and he wasn't too bad looking.
And you said you were available, huh?
Yes, I did. And then I thought, oh.
Well, let me just put the call out right now. If there are any young men, and I'm saying, you know, young in there, what do you like, a good man in his 80s? What do you like?
Well, 75.
75?
Yeah, might do.
For all my 75-year-old podcast listeners out there, you know, just contact me, and we'll have a little matchmaking service.
Oh, boy.
He must like cookies. That's right.
Well, I'll bake them.
Okay, done. Okay. So you guys live near, now this is an infamous batch of apartment buildings where a bunch of the Hollywood stars would live for periods of time because
exactly.
They were working for the studio system, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And when I arrived in California then, Jim had already made arrangements for we lived in a fourplex we were on the second floor. And it was at the corner of Crescent Heights Boulevard and Sunset Boulevard.
Uh-huh. Right where the Laugh Factory is now, for those of you who know that area, near there. Yeah.
And it was right behind Schwab's Drugstore. So that's why I made my trip every day as soon as Jim left to Schwab's Drugstore. It was very close. It was within walking distance.
Oh.
And then right across the street was the Garden of Allah, which is was like small apartments. And it was interesting. We really didn't know what was going on over there until years later. I happened to be looking at some used books, and I saw this book, The Garden of Allah. I found it back in Ohio. And I picked up that book, and I started reading it, and I couldn't believe what I was reading and everything we had missed out on when we were... in those, in 1939.
Boy, what you don't know about your neighbors,
I know, I know. And they were very secretive about it, but I learned a lot. So if you ever have a chance to read the book, I would recommend it.
Any nutshell version you'd like to recount? Or, I mean, you can keep it as tasteful as you like.
Well, I guess everybody knows what a casting couch is.
Right.
So they speak of that.
Sure. Here's a list of people that used to... This isn't even everybody, but just hear some of the names that used to live there. Lauren Bacall, Tallulah Bankhead, John Barrymore, Humphrey Bogart, Robert Benchley. I'm only in the B's. That's incredible. Mickey Cohen, Gary Cooper. Let's see. Marlene Dietrich, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Errol Flynn, Greta Garbo, Ava Gardner, Jackie Gleason. This is incredible. D.W. Griffith. Zeppo, two of the Marx Brothers, Harpo and Zeppo, used to live there. So who else had you come across?
Well, Arthur Miller
used
to stop there at night to get sleeping medication from Marilyn Monroe. And coming into Schwab's Drugstore, John Payne and Ann Shirley used to come in there. And they were the cutest couple. I just fell in love with both of them. And it was just, they were so romantic. And so, and then Ukulele Ike, Cliff Edwards.
Oh, wow.
He used to come in there all the time.
So
he was funny.
I could see why every day you'd just go there and it would be like...
You'd see different movie stars.
Every day.
Every day there was somebody walking through there. So that's what I did for entertainment. I knew no one and there was nothing for me to do, but to go to Schwab's Drugstore and drink Cokes.
And did you regale Grandpa with the stories when he'd come home and he'd ask, who'd you see today?
Oh, he wasn't terribly interested in that. He just thought I was movie struck. It was a lot of fun.
That's wonderful. Grandma, I can't tell you what a nice thing this is for me able to be able to talk to you about this.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I have so many fond memories of my long time with your granddad.
Yeah,
and all you kids and some just a wonderful family.
And you guys were married 75 years.
Little over 75 years. We were working on 76.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Right. So it's I have a full bank of precious memories.
Well, you're the best, and here's to you, and here's to Grandpa, and thank you so much for talking about this with me.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Matt. I love you.
I love you, too. Now let's go get some cookies.
Okay, right. Good. Bye-bye.
I was there circa 1942.
That's it for another gala episode of I Was There, Too. Please leave a review on iTunes. Make it a goodie. Every 5-star review that I get, cash back in your Visa debit check-it card. What? Just had a stroke. Time to end the show. Hey, Macarena. Let me just briefly explain to you how this podcast recording goes. I do the interviews in studio or in studio through the phone, but these little interstitial segments I do in my office at my home, and to record and get decent quality, I have to pull these dark drapes over the windows and I become a bit of a shut-in. So in some ways, I'm only talking to you as a, hey, could you get me out of here right now? Kind of way. Said too much. Let's take it home. If you're interested in more of my stuff, provocative, you can find the James Bonding podcast on iTunes, where Matt Myra and I discuss every James Bond film. Well, we haven't finished it yet. And listen, we're moving at a snail's pace. And my first love in podcasting, Super Ego, which is improvised character-based comedy with Mark McConville, Jeremy Carter, and Paul F. Tompkins. All right. Have a great couple of weeks, and I'll see you on the next episode. You know you're looking at yourself, but yourself isn't looking back. Kind of thematically works with what my grandma talked about today. Doesn't it, Joni Mitchell?
But you don't know what you've got till it's gone.
Pop.
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 Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.